Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR. Preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Really happy to have you listening in today as we visit with the Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman, professors in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. And they're known on this show, at least, as the Vicars of Vegetables. And the vicar of Morning Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio, Joy Cardine.
Never is been called that before. It's good to be here, Larry, and I've always enjoyed listening to your Garden Talk programs, and especially when you have the Vicars of Vegetables on. These guys are a little bit wacky, but they have great information, a lot of fun to listen to, and they know what they're talking about. Really, they do. And we hope that you will support these fun programs on Garden Talk, these informative programs on Garden Talk, with a pledge at 1-800-383-9772. 1-800-383-9772. Pledge any amount to Wisconsin Public Radio and let Larry Mueller know that you appreciate this program and Garden Talk in particular.
And you know what? We have a challenge grant, $500 grant. I think some secret admirers of the Vicars of Vegetables, or at least Garden Talk, have put up, actually current members are challenging us with a $500 challenge grant if we make our goal for the 90 minutes, which is $3,500. Wow. So we've got $3,500 to go to reach our goal, and I'm sure Jim and Erwin will probably make up the difference if we're a thousand or two short.
I thought the challenge might be, can they answer a question
correctly? Yeah,
well, that may be I doubt that they'll be doing that. We really need to rely on you and your support. Every contribution is important, and we kind of do this one person at a time, one contributor at a time. But Garden Talk is a very popular program here on the Ideas Network, and Jim and Erwin certainly are popular guests. And it's one way for you to kind of vote for the program. Do you like Garden Talk? Now is a great time to support it with your contribution. And $120 contribution, that's sort of the average anyway. We'll send you the member benefit card. We can talk about what that entails, but it's two-for-one dining at many, many, many restaurants across Wisconsin. You can give less than that, or you could give a whole lot more. Over time, we've had people give $1,000 or $1,200. Anyway, whatever
if
the amount.
If
they answer a correct give us a correct answer, that's worth at least $10.
You know, Larry, that member benefit card is a really nice benefit to get the 2-for-1 entrees at the 240 some restaurants all over the state of Wisconsin. I know I've used mine a number of times at restaurants in Madison and in Appleton and some other places that I've visited. Great food at a lot of these restaurants, but nothing like what I understand I'm going to hear. While listening to Garden Talk today, I'm going to hear some sort of Mexican Wisconsin recipe. What is this?
Well, I'll tell you. First, let me give you the number. 1-800-383-9772. 1-800-383-9772 is the number for you to call in with your contribution. And Jim Nien, who has promised several months back that he was going to come up with a Wisconsin-Mexico dish, grilled lutefisk with jalapeno sauce.
This was designed specifically for Jim Packard, wasn't it?
That's true.
That was the challenge we had from him.
Yeah.
Erwin and I went to our cookbooks. We looked under. Mm-hmm. You know what I found? This is interesting. I went to like Craig Claiborne and Julia Child.
And they didn't. Have
and
them?
I look under L, you know, for the lutefisk recipe. And then I branched out. I looked under general fish things. You know where Aura was? It was under romance foods. I couldn't believe it.
Well, I understand that we might hear a recipe along those lines today, but you know what? Right now we need to have your support of Wisconsin Public Radio, your pledge of any amount, working toward, this is an important goal, this $3,500 goal. We need to raise that to stay on track during this pledge drive. And if we raise that $3,500, an extra $500, a special challenge during Larry's program. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
You can be the next person to call. I hope you will call. It's quick, it's easy, it doesn't take very much time, just a couple of minutes, as a matter of fact, to make your contribution. And we really do need every person's help. This is Garden Talk. This is a show that's been very popular on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you enjoy this program and the kind of guests we have on it, I hope you'll call in with a contribution now at 1-800-383-9772. 1-800-383-9772. I already have some callers online with questions for Jim and Irwin. We'll get to them in just a minute, but boy, I really hope you'll call in with a contribution and help us out. And it's a vote for Garden Talk, isn't it?
It is a vote for Garden Talk, and it actually is a vote for all of what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, too, because your contribution helps pay for 31% of our budget. Your contribution helps pay for everything it takes to make a radio station run, and we count on listener support to really be the service we are. So every little bit helps. Your contribution of any amount helps bring you this program and all of what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. 1-800-383-9772.
And if you've never contributed, I hope you'll do it today during this program. New contributors are really especially welcomed. 1-800-383-9772. Joy, we'll look forward to your return. Yeah, come back and let us know how we're doing. Okay. And I tell you what, we've got the Vickers, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman here, and they're ready to answer your vegetable questions. And
I think we're ready to listen to their vegetable questions. Right? Can you promise any answers?
That's part of the challenge grant option here, I think. I think it should be accompanied by a haiku, I think, is appropriate. Now, I look over across the room here, and I find my first lutefisk jalapeno sauce haiku. May I read that, Larry? Did Jim Packard write that?
No. Mary Kay Shearer, who is our promotions director, has written a haiku. You read it.
Oh, my lutefisk, married with jalapeno, makes my mouth water. That wasn't the one I wrote. No. Do you want to hear mine?
All right, let me hear yours.
Oh, is this appropriate? I don't know. Simmering
unlikely. Unlikely to be appropriate, but go ahead. Go ahead anyway.
Simmering or sliming on your grill, what self-respecting cod would envision this end? Lutefisk for dinner.
Okay. Oh, well, you know, I have a
is it, will this will there be angry calls now? Will there be?
I actually have a song. There's a song, "O Lutefisk," sung to the tune of "O Tannenbaum," which
how does it go?
I might favor you with a little later on.
All right. Whoa. All right. Later in the program.
The singing star.
Mary in West Bend, though, has a question, so let's go to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, I'm so glad that the veggie guys are here today because we have just started a community garden program here in West Bend through my Ozaki Master Gardener group.
Cool.
And I got a soil test, and the organic matter comes back at 2.6%, which is more than I thought it was going to be. What is a good number in the organic matter?
This is a trick question.
I know it doesn't have anything to do with salsa, and I apologize.
Well, I tell you what, is it sort of a sandy soil to begin with?
Oh, it's pretty much rocky soil to
rocky
begin
soil
with.
To begin with. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So 2.6% on the...
Yeah, that's fine. Heck. Can't get any better than that, can you, Ruben?
Well, I think that's wonderful. I mean, you could do very well with 2.6% organic matter. I mean, you could certainly build up the organic matter to greater if you'd like.
Okay.
But that's fabulous for the soil that you're on. I'm kind of surprised to hear it's that high.
Well, you know, I didn't know exactly what that meant because we have pretty much no nitrogen in there, so they're recommending a high turf fertilizer nitrogen. And some of the people in the group are wondering about the use of malorganite. Do you know, is there research out there because of the high metallic content? Is that a good thing for veggies or not so much?
I'm so glad you asked that question. do you have a haiku? I crush and mulch malorganite on a regular basis and found that it is an attractive addendum to my soil profile. What is that?
It's malorganite is, waste from... The
Milwaukee Sewage Department.
So it basically is ground lutefisk.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I would pile it on.
Well, I don't know.
You know, I think malorganite and lutefisk, if there isn't poetry in those two words alone, I think we've achieved it.
Well, I'm not so sure, Jim. Erwin, what do you think?
Yeah, it is a great question. I'm sure that this has been studied. I'm sure that there's research out there, and I'm sure that there's been concerns. I just don't know the answer. I don't know that either of us know.
Isn't it incredible the first time in 10 years
that we don't know the answer?
Stumped.
Yeah, but there will be a caller. No doubt, within the next hour, who can call in and talk about the use of that.
I remember this now.
Because I did some research on it.
Did you?
For every person that said don't ever do it, three people said yes, do it. So, I mean, we're sort of in the middle, and I was looking to be tipped over to one side of the fence. Yeah.
We'll have to look and see what's been published out there. Jim, did you?
No, I was just going to say that you would not allow Superman anywhere near, because I think, isn't he particularly sensitive?
Malorganite,
I think that does him in. So, Erwin and I can visit, but Superman is out.
Well, obviously, I know it's used on agricultural crops, mm-hmm. But whether or not it's used on vegetable crops, somebody will call in. And
yeah, we'll get an answer.
We'll get an answer. Thanks, Mary. And I can't go online myself because we have some other things on our computer that prevent me from doing that today. So we'll go to Mary in Belleville instead. Mary, hi to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Last year, I lost all of my vine crops, melons, cucumbers, winter squash. I even lost the zucchini, everything like the cucurbits. And it was due apparently to a virus carried by squash bugs. Now I'm wondering whether I should just lay off growing any of those things this year and hope the squash bugs go away, or whether it's safe to try again.
All right. Squash bugs, are they sort of, do they come and go a little bit depending on the year, or are they pretty much always here, Jim?
You know, I think you know, you've got to go out there and do it again. You've got to go back. This is battle.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I think, the environment and the development of the squash, the development of the pathogen, the pest, excuse me, it may simply not, it niched last year, it may not niche this year. I would say, go ahead and try it again.
Yeah.
Maybe dedicate less space to them?
Well, that's, of course, that's an economic decision.
Yeah.
Right, about based on resources available to you. But I would go back out and try. I mean, how large of a garden do you have? Are you able to do some rotations or?
Yeah, to a small degree, but the squash and melons take up
right,
so much
they
room.
Take up so much.
Yeah, they take up a lot of room.
I would say go for it, and just because I think what you're going to find is that you simply may not get the niche of the particular environmental considerations that allowed for that virus to be developed last year.
Yeah.
I mean, this has certainly happened. We had a huge problem in snap beans. With the soybean aphid, all of a sudden it disappeared because we don't have the environmental conditions for that particular vector. If you don't have the environmental conditions, you're not going to have the problem.
Yeah.
Thank you. Live with hope.
Yeah, live with hope. Thanks a lot for calling. Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman from the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison, where they are professors. I'm Larry Melier. You are listening to Garden Talk, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking the vegetable garden today with our two guests, Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman, our Vicars of Vegetables. Have some open lines so you can get on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments, and we will be happy to get you on the air. And we'll take some more calls here, but just before we do that, let's talk a little bit about peppers. And I know, Jim, you usually plant a lot of pepper. Is there anything new in the pepper field this year, new varieties?
The ones, of course, that Erwin and I have been working on for several years. I should say that a number of callers have have actually emailed us and requested seed. We got our seed a little bit late this year. So anyone who wants to try some of our new Wisconsin Wosta, the roasting pepper that we've developed, I planted an extra flat or two. And if they can visit us at the here at the university, we'll be happy to give them some seedlings of the Wisconsin Wosta.
And that's a poblano pepper.
Right.
That's a poblano pepper. That is of sort of that blocky. Mm-hmm. You don't know what a poblano looks like. Sort of that blocky, dark, really dark green, very intense, dark green pepper that is perfect for roasting.
Oh, and it's called Wosta?
Well, that was the
or
clever
is it Rosta?
Name. You know, we could the Rosta. I was thinking Wisconsin, you know, I was trying to tie that double. You know, we could call it, if we had it, we didn't want to call it lutefisk.
No.
The Wisconsin Wosta was I thought, personally, a very clever name. But apparently, looking at your faces, I can see that this was a bad. There are probably any number of listeners out there right now saying, my God, that is the worst name for a poblano pepper I've ever heard.
But it would
so
be the
I would
first...
suggest they can suggest new names.
Well, that we should open it up. But yeah. This is probably the very first poblano pepper that's been developed for Wisconsin.
Locally adapted.
And Jim, you might want to mention the roasting technique if we can, Larry, because this is a really unique and wonderful thing to do with these poblano peppers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I have my own personal roaster, but you can actually roast a poblano just with a fork, just stick a fork into it and put it right over your stove. In fact, the secret, however, is high intensity flame for short periods of time.
Which is why you use the acetylene torch.
That's exactly right.
That works really well. If you have a torch, right?
It's the Maillard process, right? It's all about
You really use a torch.
Yeah.
Right?
You can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Mine, I have like three Bunsen burners.
Jim uses that welding helmet. He puts that thing on and he gets that torch going.
I turn them. The only thing is that when you can actually do it on your grill as well, but you have to have your grill, it has to be one that has open flame. Mm-hmm. You can dip them in oil. You can actually put a little oil on them. That way they'll flame up. Mm-hmm. So what you're trying to do is basically burn off that cuticle and then convert those free sugars, right, into caramelizing those free sugars so that you generate those new flavors. You're not trying to cook the thing down into a soft green mush. You're trying to basically burn off that cuticle and convert those sugars into caramel. And that's what a roasted pepper is really all about. Then, of course, you can stuff it with that delicious Wisconsin cheese.
Mm.
And then dip it into the egg batter. And although we can't offer that, we would be happy to do that sometime for anyone.
That's right. Now, also the plastic bag, which is a kind of a key, right? Do you want to mention that?
Yeah, that's right. There's two ways you can do this. I do a plastic bag, but after you roast them, you put them into a plastic bag, and which is referred to as the pepper sweat.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Right. Isn't that just lyrical? Oh, peppers sweating in a plastic bag. And then after they're removed, it's very easy to remove that burnt cuticle. Because you don't want to just eat that burnt cuticle. The whole idea is remove it.
Yeah.
Right? Right below that delicious layer are all these caramelized sugars.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Talk about good living.
Sounds like you're making me hungry.
Oh,
Amy and Exonia, let's go to you. Amy, hi.
Hi. First, I'd like to just say I'd love to work in a garden with one of you guys. It sounds like you'd make it pretty fun.
We try.
My question is, I've heard that you can use natural methods of keeping the bugs out, like planting certain herbs or certain plants around your vegetable garden to keep different bugs and different animals out of the garden. And I was wondering, I'm confused. I'm not sure, is that peppermint or is that basil or is it something completely different than that?
Okay.
Marigolds?
Marigolds? Marigolds work?
Well, they'll reduce nematode populations. I know that. Certainly, I mean, anything that's going to allow a rotation, some insects are going to be attracted, some are going to be repelled by certain, volatile or aromatic aspects of a plant. And so they can have some effect. Will you be able to control any, difficult pest 100%? No.
No, but it could help. Marigolds are great for nematodes.
Right. And I think prayer also plays a role in this, probably an equally important role.
And a floating row cover wouldn't hurt either.
A what?
A floating row cover.
What's that?
Well, that's...
It's an old bed sheet, basically. you basically cover your row with a thin kind of a muslin, and it allows enough light through. And you can often protect seedlings using the floating row cover.
And they're really cheap. You can very inexpensive at any garden center is going to have they have the materials.
There's nothing cheap at garden centers, I've learned recently.
So
the marigolds would probably work the best then over the basil or the peppermint or anything like that.
Basil, I mean, you're going to be eating that yourself, so you're going to be the principal predator for your basil field, right? But I think often flowers, anything that's sort of aromatic is going to either, you know, attract or repel certain insects.
Yeah. Good luck, Amy. Thanks a lot for calling.
All right, thank you.
Good luck. Are you growing organically?
Well, I'm going to try and dabble this summer. The last couple summers haven't really worked out because I've been taking college courses. Mm. And so this year I'm hoping to kind of get into full gear and grow some of my own vegetables in the garden and have my son help get involved in it.
Oh, yeah. I try to get my sons involved in it as well. And
mixed results.
I would say mixed results. Yeah. They you know, none of them want to even take our class. Or when is it? Is there something frightening about
that? Oh, Amy, you should take their class.
Where is this at?
It's at the UW-Madison, and it's called World Vegetable Crops. Is that right?
That's correct.
Do you have a summer class?
No, but they should. Erwin will sometimes lecture while Jim is roasting peppers.
That's right. Correcting my mistake. We should say that doesn't that sound like physics 101, world vegetables 101? Right. That doesn't sound. But we do have a subtitle for that class. It's called, don't we have a semicolon?
Yes, that's right.
And it's called World Vegetables 370, Works of Art That You Can Eat.
Yeah. Now you make a meal in the class then right away too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, until the we don't like to talk about that specifically as to what the lab proportion is, but let's say that you will not go home hungry.
Is that open to the public, or do you have to be a student at the UW-Madison?
I think you have to be a student or a special student in order to take it.
And you sound like a special person who would qualify to be a special student.
Because I go to MATC in Madison, so well,
there
I don't
know.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, you might be able to do that.
Please come and see us, and maybe we can work something out.
All right.
That's terrific.
All right.
At least you can audit.
You can audit it. Sure, why not? Shireen in Springbrook, it is your turn. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just read my local paper, and it says the Vickers of Vegetables are going to be in Spooner at our middle school.
That's right.
May 17th.
That's right. In a couple of weeks, we'll be taking our act on the road.
Oh, and I think that's wonderful. I hope I get to see you. But, you know, there's a saying that says, hope springs eternal in the gardener's breast. That's why we start every year new and try it again.
That's right.
You know, there's such wisdom in that, isn't there? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think I was going to mention to the previous caller as well that, you know, we can't expect every vegetable to work in our garden every year. Mm-hmm. Climates change, even here in Wisconsin. So part of the allure of gardening is really having hope and recognizing that, you know, where your squash might be attacked and lost, well, as soon as you find out that it's attacked and lost, you know, you put in the fall radishes or you put in the fall broccoli or the fall kohl crops. You know, it's adapting to the environmental changes that occur, and that's part of the allure and, I guess, magic of gardening, isn't it, Erwin?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it reminds me of the psalm, which is, those who sow in tears shall reap in joy.
Oh,
and you know, I mean, I think there is that recognition of a cycle of nature, right? That we repeat for better or for worse.
Yeah. Thank you, Shireen.
I also wanted to mention that I live alone, but my son fenced the garden to keep all those deer and rabbits out. And nobody that lives alone should have a 40 by 80 foot garden.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
But I can't resist.
That's
you got to do it, Shireen. Thank you.
Do we have any title for that presentation we're doing on May 17th?
In conjunction with the Spring Fling.
Oh, we're going to dance and sing then?
You could if you'd like. Okay. But what it is they have all the art and the projects the kids have worked on all year, and then they will have it displayed, so be sure
We'll be judging them.
No, probably not.
Okay, we're going to figure out what our role is. Now, you're going to have to figure out which one, based on our voices alone, you're going to have to figure out which one is Erwin and which one is Jim.
Well, I teach a knitting class, and I'll come up there with my
knitting
bag.
I'm kind of the good-looking one.
You'll know me. I'm the little old lady with the knitting bag.
Okay.
Jim will have the apron on.
I'll have the apron.
All right. Thanks, Shereen. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Talking with the Vicars of Vegetables today, Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman, thanks to them for coming, and thanks to you for listening in. Again, 1-800-642-1234. And let's go to Lynn in Plover. Hi, Lynn.
Hello. I wish to talk about asparagus because invariably on Garden Talk in May, somebody calls in and says how wonderful the wild-picked asparagus is that they had. Uh-huh. And I just wish to inform people that when you get out on the country roads, the roadway is only a right-of-way, and the hedgerow, therefore, belongs to the landowner.
Unless you own a Hummer.
Unless you own that, yeah.
Then you can go right through the fence and just pick at your delight.
Oh, Lynn.
Hosting asparagus is what we try and keep people from doing.
I understand. And I understand. I've got a sneaking suspicion that you have been the victim of asparagus robbers.
All of us farmers out here are. So anyway, I just wanted to let people know that does belong to the landowner, and perhaps you should ask.
All right. Good thought. Thanks, Lynn.
Okay.
What's the origin of asparagus? Where is that from originally, Erwin?
I'm stumped.
You know, I have a sense that it must be, you know, an Asian vegetable, or I have a sneaking suspicion that it might be Afghanistani. It certainly is not native to the U.S.
No, I would say Asia.
I love asparagus. It's great, grilled especially. Blue in Richland Center. Hi, thank you very much for calling.
Yeah, hi. I was just calling to give a book recommendation to the lady who just called a little bit ago about wanting to do planting certain herbs and plants to help ward off pests.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And my recommendation, there's two of them, Carrots Love Tomatoes by Louise, and I always forget how to say her last name, but it's R-I-O-T-T-E. And that's wonderful. It's one of my gardening Bibles, actually. It deals a lot with that, exactly what she was asking. And then the other one is Dead Daisies Make Me Crazy, and by Lauren Nancaro.
That is an evocative title.
Yeah, and that one's really interesting as well. And then I wanted to comment on that Milorganite, because I'm an organic certified farm, and I know that Milorganite will say 100% organic because it's a natural-based product, but the woman might just be interested to know that it's not an approved product for organic certified farms. No sewage sludge products are. So, you know, it might be something that they need to think more about when they're doing their community gardens, if they're going to have it kind of a cooperative style and have other people deciding how the land is going to be, you know, used and stuff. So.
So I want to make sure I understood. So it does say that it's certified organic?
Yeah, I mean, what it says is if you buy a bag of Milorganite, it'll say 100% organic on the front, but it's not saying certified organic. It's not OMRI approved, OMRI approved.
Sure, that makes sense.
So, but you can always call it extension agent or, you know, a certifying agency, you know, if they're wanting to keep their community garden organic. Maybe they don't, but it's just something that they might want to be thinking about, because sometimes those products can be really misleading, because it'll say organic on the bag, but it's really just because it's a naturally based product, but it's not an approved product for like organic certified farms like ours. So
they're taking advantage of the organic, because actually you could put a lump of coal in there and say it's 100% organic.
Exactly.
Thanks, Blue.
Yep, no problem.
Appreciate it very much. And the two books were Carrots Love Tomatoes and Dead Daisies Make Me Crazy. I like both those titles. And I have not read either book.
And for our last caller, I think the appropriate book would be the Wisconsin Statutes or the U.S. Constitution.
Thanks again for calling. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Diane in Milwaukee, good morning.
Hi, how are you folks today?
Great, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
You're more than welcome. Mm-hmm. I used to have a quarter-acre organic garden back in the 70s in Wisconsin. Then we moved away, my late husband and I. But I did companion planting, you know, the lady that called in and wanted to know about the herbs.
Yeah.
And at the top of the garden, I always put my perennial bed, you know, and I had the mint up there, and then I put the basil in there to kind of... But after one quarter of the perennial, then I would do my tomatoes, and I put nasturtiums
marigolds, basil. I kind of put it around, you know, the tomato plant. And then I would put some zinnias and cosmos flowers in between. Then I go back and put the carrots, beans, and everything. And, you know, I never thought about the squash, why I never had a problem with my squash, because I do the winter squash, you know, the blue hummers and the butternuts and the acorns, and also do the summer squash, too. But I always planted a lot of cosmos. I don't know if that has any effect or not, but the companion planting...
You may have been lucky. In fact, you probably were not near corn.
Pardon me?
It may have been that your specific environment didn't allow the squash beetles, or, you know, do you direct seed or did you transplant? One of the big problems we've got are the striped and spotted cucumber beetles, which on seedlings in some years can just be,
awful.
Just eat them right down. I mean, heavens, I'm going into transplanting winter squash because just to be able to deal with the problem, I've got to give them a head start. I can't deal with we're trying to grow organically, and I can't deal with those beetles. They'll eat them right off. So it may be that, you know, if you're not near a cornfield, you might, you know, there is actually research. You know, I mean, one of the things you're going to have to do is sort of test these hypotheses regarding whether or not the cosmos was there. But it may be the absence of other companion crops that might have been occurring near your garden. Because anytime I grow near corn, of course, you're going to have striped and spotted cucumber beetles, and they're going to just attack your squash plants.
But it sounds like your garden would have been really pretty.
Oh, it was really, really a fabulous garden. And I always had it. It was a small, but I got a neighbor to come in. He had a great big tractor, and he'd come in and he'd disc it in the fall, and then I'd put horse manure down, which I know you're not supposed to do. But then I'd have somebody come in with a rototiller, and then I'd plant. And I bought a little mini rototiller for the lady that had the big garden.
Cool.
It was about 12 inches wide, and I'd plant my rows a little wider. So for the weeding, I'd just whisk down the rows with a little mini rototiller.
Why can't you do the horse manure? What's wrong with that?
Well, I heard the seeds in there. You know, you get more weeds. That's what I heard in the old days. I don't know what the current
compost it.
Yeah, it's better if it's composted first, I think, because as it starts to break down in the soil, then it kind of ties up the nitrogen in the soil.
Horse manure, compost at high temperatures as well, so you're going to kill them all off. All you have to do is, you know, put it in a big pile. Horse manure in a big pile. I mean, does that offer any possibilities for you of any institutions that you're familiar with?
Okay.
And that certainly doesn't make me think of any place I work.
but you know, the other thing, too, I know the years I did the wheat straw, the golden wheat straw, and put that down between around the tomatoes, and that would work, too. And it was
and the golden, nice. Not just wheat straw, but golden wheat straw. I mean, people are having garden cosmos and flowers. I think this, isn't that what gardening's all about?
Yeah.
Not just good eating, but the aesthetics and the joy of it all.
And the research and the testing.
And I'd pick the flowers, and then I'd pick the herbs, too, you know, the mint. The mint could get a little wild.
Didn't use those nasturtiums, you know, and put them into your salad.
Yeah.
Heavens, of course you did.
Yeah. And I forgot the name of the little plant that had the little pretty blue star flowers on it, and those were edible, too, and I used to put those in the salad, too. And,
chicory.
I got to get back to that.
Yeah, you do. You're talking yourself into it, Diane.
You know, I'm exercising my arm just so I can get my trowel moving this afternoon. I'm ready to go.
Well, it's nice talking to you folks. I'm glad to see this program.
Diane, I thank you very much for calling and appreciate your call as well. And you can join in, too, as we talk vegetables today with the Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890. Is it generally true that the smaller the pepper, the bigger the burn when you...
Wow.
That's what I've heard.
Is there any relationship there?
Jim Packard came up with that.
Let me just say maybe at the outset that there is, you know, any vegetable or fruit that's small, that's, say, relatively undiluted with water. In other words, you know, as you get close to harvest, you get it, you'll dilute the flavor, you'll dilute the strength of
some of the qualities. Now, but with respect to capsaicin, which is what gives the pungency to pepper, I would suspect that that's not quite as true, right?
You know, I think for a different reason, though. I think it's because
the solubility.
What we've done is domesticate for large fruit. And one of the things we've done during the process of domestication is that we've tended to reduce or alter the capsaicin level. So I think we look at it now and we say, boy, those little hot peppers are real burners. But in fact, they're simply undomesticated.
Great
I
point.
Bet there's great variation out there in those within even small fruit for the level of capsaicin.
That's a great point.
Well, let's take some more calls. And let's see, Betsy, I think, and Hurley is next. Betsy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, we are going to the cabin this summer, and we're looking to, my husband usually makes salsa, and we're looking to plant a tomato that is hardy in the mid-Minnesota region, over by Detroit Lakes, you know where that's at?
From Hurley, is it straight, pretty much straight west?
Yes.
Okay, so it's at that. At that level.
Mm-hmm. So the Arctic Circle, basically. Okay.
Yeah. There's about a 20-day growing season.
Okay.
You get the great season last year.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I think you're going to have to be careful because I think it's going to be a little late right now to start tomatoes from seedling. I think I would go to my local garden center and I would walk in there and I would just say, please, give me your best early tomato adapted for the Arctic Circle.
Do you think a Wisconsin 55 would do it, or is that going to be too late?
You know, I think there are earlier varieties than Wisconsin 55, but you know, but the other issue is, you know, just early alone. Let's face it; that's not good enough.
No.
We're making salsa here.
Yeah.
We're going to have something with flavor. So I think what you should do is stop by UW-Madison in about a week and a half, 2 weeks, and I'll give you some of our incredibly well-named 1x10. And again, I think callers out there...
Well, didn't you name the Wisconsin Wosta also? I mean, have you thought about getting a marketing consultant?
I sense anger out there in vegetable land, and I'm frightened by this. And I think we can do better, and I think our callers can do better with regards to renaming...
How do you spell Wosta?
I spell it, you know, very cleverly... I thought WROASTER, the Wisconsin Wosta. But apparently everyone thinks I'm Bugs Bunny or something. I mean, I'm getting these looks at me. We're going over there to Spooner on the 17th. And, you know, people.
We could be ridiculed.
We could be
ridiculed.
Is there anger out there?
There is anger. Yeah. One by ten.
The one by ten. Can you do better than that? Yeah. You sound like such a professor.
It sounds like a barcode.
Oh, heavens.
If
you make a contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, you'll be. We don't like to say sell. We think any contribution, and we will be happy to donate, give almost anyone who stops by. Actually, we give it anyone who stops by, I will give seedlings to. And you can get some Wisconsin Wosta at the same time, and then you can make your. I am on this mission, Erwin, to convert Wisconsin into the world center for the chile relleno.
Yeah. Well, isn't there something that I've heard you mention about the color of the chile relleno that relates to the Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah. It's the green. You know, you get this green, liquid green richness on the inside covered with this golden meringue of...
Oh, you're making me hungry.
And, you know, isn't that... When you bite into a chile relleno, it is the essential vegetable equivalent of eating the Green Bay Packers.
My cousin.
It don't get no better than that. Not here in Packerland.
My cousin is Navajo and Ojibwe, and he told me the best salsa.
Let's hear it.
Whole peeled tomatoes.
Whole peeled tomato.
Canned tomatoes.
Okay, that's cool. I'm cool with that.
Boil your jalapeno peppers until the tips fall off. Don't cut them up because you'll be making pepper gas.
Okay.
Boil the jalapenos.
And garlic salt.
And that's it.
What about some onion?
That's it.
Nope.
Three ingredients.
I wonder why the boiled jalapeno. That's odd.
And he made it in a pesto for me. And I have been making it ever since my brothers drink it by the jar.
Wow. Well, if your brother's now, what else are your brothers drinking? Well, you know, while they're wolfing down their jars of salsa pesto, is there a? There wouldn't be a Budweiser on the corner of the room, would there?
Jim Neon, thanks a lot. Jim Neon, also and Irwin Goldman, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Garden Talk time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Jim Neonhus and Irwin Goldman, our vicars of vegetables. And because Sue in Hartford and Kathy in Green Bay have been waiting so long, we want to go right to the phones. First to Sue in Hartford. Sue, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry, Jim, Irwin. Love the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My husband and I are city folk. We bought a house across the street from Pike Lake State Park in Hartford.
Uh-huh.
We've got a couple of acres and a wonderful yard, and it's time to do some planting in it.
Boy.
So we're thinking about planting a couple of apple trees, a Honeycrisp and a Golden or Yellow Delicious, because we were told it's a good pollinator.
Yes, that's right.
And is that true?
Yes.
I'm so glad you asked the vegetable guys about this. Our standard advice is to with fruit trees is to bring out your chainsaw almost immediately and eliminate them and really go for the vegetables. But if you insist...
And we did have some concerns. We haven't done it yet, but we had some concerns about wasps. Have you had experience with lots of wasps and fruit trees?
I've had fruit trees. Well, I've had apple trees in my backyard, and you'd have wasps and bees. And one time when I was mowing the lawn, I left a can of Coca-Cola on the table. And then when I went to take a drink out of it again, there was one inside that I had unfortunately gotten stung the inside of my mouth. But
oh no,
I never really have had any major problems with that. Irwin or Jim?
Well, you know, what about the vegetable garden? Tell us more about that.
Yeah.
We have a very small vegetable garden. We do bell peppers and tomatoes.
All
right. Last year we did some chilies.
And are you going to do your jalapeno? Because, you know, a previous caller recommended an unusual recipe, which I'm still puzzled by a little bit, where he suggested that you grow your jalapenos and boil them.
I heard that.
And then drink the juice.
Well, that was, of course, her two brothers, who I think were drinking a lot of things in addition to that juice. But I wonder if, have you ever tried a boiled jalapeno? Are you just going to do bell peppers?
No, I haven't tried it either. But anyway, on the apple trees, I guess I wouldn't worry too much about it. I mean, it's more a problem when if you let the apples, you know, fall and rot on the ground. And I guess when I'm sort of let things get away from me a little bit and I had a bunch of apples rotting on the ground, that's when I had more problems.
Okay. And then another question. Any concerns? Now, I've heard you're not supposed to plant on top of or near a septic mound, but we were thinking about extending our vegetable garden into that area.
Isn't that what mulliganite is really all about? isn't that pretty much the same issue? I mean, if it works for one, isn't, you know, it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander, isn't it? Am I right on that one, Irwin?
You know, those mounds are pretty thick, deep. A carrot or a potato planted is, I couldn't imagine would come in contact.
Oh, no, I thought she was talking about her fruit trees.
No,
the vegetable. Oh, I can't imagine that would be a problem.
No.
I would say eat with delight. And in fact, it may, you know,
it could enhance the flavor.
It's only going to enhance the flavor, let's face it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like mulliganite. You know, I mean, you can't, some vegetables you just can't eat without a little covering of that on there.
Oh, boy. You don't want that.
Okay.
You don't want that for sure. Sue, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Kathy in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I'm going to have to move into my garage. I got too many birds singing out here.
I'm working
outside. It's so beautiful.
Oh, wow. What
wonderful
a lovely
day.
Oh, I can just have a mental image of your afternoon.
Yeah. The reason I'm calling is about the mulliganite.
Yeah.
Oh.
Do not use it in your vegetable garden.
That's what I thought.
It has traces of heavy metal in it.
That's kind of what I thought.
And
it's mostly if it gets on the vegetable. I'm not so sure that it's not going to be taken up. The metals won't be taken up by the vegetable, I don't think. But if they're on the vegetable itself and they're not cleaned properly.
Well, they can. I mean, vegetables can take up.
They can take up.
They
some
can heavy? Take up small. Okay. Take up small amounts of lead, cadmium, things like that, which could be a problem if they accumulate. I could see that.
Okay.
And you have to think of not just heavy metals. They've proven that if you take antibiotics, some of these pharmaceutical drugs, it passes through us, and they're finding it in.
Yeah, in the milorganite.
Yeah, I wouldn't use that. And I may have misunderstood being outside, being distracted, you know, listening to you. Did the lady say she had squash bugs or vine borers?
I think she said squash bugs.
Yeah, she was talking about
if you have vine borers, you cannot replant. You're going to have to sift every inch of your garden and clean out the, is it the pupae?
Yeah.
So I have
all the trash has to go and everything else.
Right.
Yeah, squash vine borer can be a big issue as well.
I had it about that. Yeah,
but she was talking about a vector of some of the viruses.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the Latin derivation of milorganite? I'm sorry. Why am I stunned by this word? It just doesn't seem appropriate for what it actually is.
Well, it's
Mallorca.
It's like you think like a clay mineral, which has that like kaolinite or whatever.
No, I was picturing an Italian village, you know, the Mallorca village in the province of, you know, I'm sorry. I'm just sort of puzzled by the origins of this word.
I'm going to compliment you guys. You're like click and clack.
Oh, bless you.
That's the highest
compliment
you get. We've been waiting. I can't tell you how many years we have waited for that one. God bless you.
Thank you.
Oh, man, we needed that one.
The only difference that I've found is that they do answer the questions. Yeah. But other than that, we are very similar.
We are brothers.
That's actually. Right. That's
a lot
right.
of people
That's
don't
right.
know that.
That's right.
Thanks, Kathy.
I'm the cute one.
Thanks
now.
For calling. Brenna in Fall Creek, it's your turn. Hi, Brenna.
Hi. I have a few questions. I have a willow or two willows that are fairly new. They're about probably 15 feet tall, maybe. And and apple trees that are going to be in their second year only. And they both have, you know, little shoots coming off the trunks. And I'm wondering if it's a good time. Can I go ahead and cut those? Should I cut those? The other thing with my apple trees is I was not supposed to get, you know, apples for probably, 5 years maybe? And there's flowers all over my new apple tree.
Erwin, she's asking the vegetable guys if she should cut down.
Yeah,
the tree
I think you should cut it at ground level.
Yeah.
I think that's what we recommend.
I would definitely recommend getting the biggest chainsaw possible out as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what,
I don't want it to wreck the branches. I'm sorry.
Well, it shades the vegetable garden.
Yeah.
I've got a vegetable garden too.
Good.
Okay.
And it's got
good.
A whole space by itself, and not in any competition with the apple trees at all. I've got like 10 acres, and everybody's happy out there.
Okay. Wow. Well, I tell you what, the willows, there's no problem with hacking off those suckers.
Sure.
I wouldn't.
So, and I don't have to put anything on them like that. Whatever.
No. I mean, you're going to get more. More will come back, but you're just going to have to whack them off when they come back.
And they won't get disease in the
no.
wounds or whatever.
No, willows are pretty hardy.
Okay. And another question. I have two 14-foot by 4 raised bed strawberry patches.
Oh, fun.
They are in their, let's see, this will be their third year. The first year I was told to pluck off all the blossoms so you'd get more blossoms later on. Well, no blossoms came back. But last year it was crazy. We had tons. We still have strawberries, actually. But a lot of green, a real lot of green. And by the time the strawberries were done and I lost interest, you know, then they all just kind of died. And, I mean, you know, I mulched them up well over the winter. And now pulling the straw off them to mulch them up again and get them ready for, you know, there's little sprouts already. But I'm wondering if I should just go ahead and get all that dead stuff out really well and not worry about the new tender shoots, you know, because they'll probably come back, or if I should just kind of, because I like to use my hands to mulch and just crackle up all the dead stuff, you know. And I'm wondering what's the best way to deal with those, or am I too late? And I just
this is the magic of radio, isn't it? I have a mental image of this garden. I have her out there. She's walking and mulching simultaneously as she's in that strawberry patch, right?
Yeah,
are the birds singing at this very moment?
Yeah, actually, I've got lots of birds.
Oh, yeah. It's a great day for the birds. We talked about birds' songs yesterday on the program, and this is the peak season for bird songs. They're in the mating mode right now. Tell you what, so you're worried that maybe the strawberries will die or something? Because the,
I'm worried about too much of that green left over that's now all dead, of course, and real thick on the patch. And then there's new shoots already, so I'm wondering if I probably should have been out there earlier getting all that off, because now I'm wondering, do I need to pay... You know, be careful around those new little shoots that break off really easy, and there's just a few here and there, but...
Well, Erwin, you want to be careful, don't you?
Always be cautious. I would say that's a rule of life. I would say, and, you know, I'm still having a trouble with the, you know, the mental image of the green things that are now turned brown. What is that?
They're dead.
You see, I would actually carefully go in and transplant my leeks in between the strawberry
that's
plants.
Perfect.
And that, doesn't that sound a
There's
lot better?
There's all that mulch there.
Yeah, I think that would be a possibility.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I would look for companion gardening, mm-hmm. you know, strawberries. What goes good with, what would be the best vegetable to companion crop with the strawberry?
Well, I think I like the idea of leeks or something like that, that you can use that mulch for the base of the leek.
Oh, yeah.
And blanch it.
Because when you go right out to harvest the leek, you get all that extra green, which... Lord knows, this color loves to have turned into brown, and that will happen. I think with those leeks, that might be a good suggestion. I was just out planting heavens, did we put in leeks? Oh, beyond belief, leeks. Oh,
well, leeks is the answer, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know if we can help you on the strawberry side of things.
I'm sorry. Did we? Erwin and I are politicians. We're never going to answer your question, but we're answering some other question that no one even asked. I'm sorry. It's kind of the thing, you know, it's a habit you pick up by listening to our politicians. I'm sorry.
Brenna, thank you. John and Eau Claire, hi.
Hello. Got an interesting story I found out last spring.
Okay.
I have asparagus patch in my garden.
Yeah.
And I lost maybe 3/4 of my hills, and I was going to plant new ones, so I have one of those little Manus tillers.
Yep.
I went over the whole bed with that, and before I can get the new ones planted, I have about 6 new hills from where I tilled that just came up on the room.
Oh, the asparagus?
Yeah. I don't know what the tilling did, but all of a sudden I've got asparagus again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well,
I think it's a blessing of tilling that is often overlooked, I think.
Maybe you loosened the soil up enough that the plants could, the ones that you had in there, could work their way through.
They were there,
yeah.
Weren't they?
You just chopped them up and moved them around a bit.
When you lost them, you simply forgot where they were, I think is really the issue. Were they on the right side? Were they near the barn? Yeah. I've forgotten. That constituted loss. And actually, your tiller found them for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I've got another question for you.
Yeah.
I had a lot of trouble trying to grow Brussels sprouts.
Oh.
I get tall plants, and then I'll only get a Brussels sprout maybe as big around your tip of your little finger.
But you get real tall plants?
Yeah.
Yeah. How much fertilizer do you use?
I try to go organic. I just use grass clippings and...
Okay.
Okay.
My first thought was that maybe there was too much nitrogen in your soil, and that tends to promote growth of the vines and the stems and so forth, and not the flowers themselves.
And the Brussels sprout itself is such a... Isn't that a tremendously interesting vegetable,
yes,
though?
Yes, it is.
I mean, think
I
of
love
the fact
Brussels
that
sprouts.
I mean, it's really a fall vegetable. And not only that, think of it. It's like tiny little cabbages.
Yes, it is.
All along the... I mean, like lateral buds going up the stairway of vegetable heaven. I mean, that's what the Brussels sprout is really all about. But it's a fall vegetable. Isn't it interesting that we want to eat it after a frost? Why do we do that, Erwin?
Well, you have the concentration of those sugars in the interior of the plant. And that's what makes it just the flavors for so many of these brassicas, right? The broccolis and
You know, the thing I love about it is that every other, you go out, you know, it's the depressing days of late fall when your garden is, you know, it's frozen over. And yet you find those Brussels sprouts that cabbage stairway to the stars, right? And what do you find on the top of that? You find that they're covered with ice, and yet you can still harvest them and eat them.
Yeah.
They're still edible, and in fact, you enrich the flavor.
They're better.
They enrich the flavor.
But now, I'm not sure that we've answered
John's
question.
I think it's soil.
Should we bother to answer any of the questions? I don't really... Is there any necessity for that? Only when Packard is here do we have to answer the questions.
That's right. He likes that.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, you might try a soil test. There might you might just have too much nitrogen.
Sure.
In the soil, I wouldn't. I don't know that I do any fertilizing before I had a little soil test.
You know, that luxuriant vegetative growth that he described. You know, probably just too much fertility.
I would try a different variety. I would look around for different varieties because you know where Brussels sprouts are really bred for is actually, ironically, the coast, the northern coast of California, where it's sort of a constant, boring, drizzly rain.
60 degrees.
Yeah. And you'll find that there's variation among the varieties that will allow them to produce better in Wisconsin. So I think you got to do a little research.
And I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And I also thank Joy Cardine for stopping by again. Joy, we have a $1,000 goal to reach in this half hour, and we've got about 8 minutes to do it.
Hey, that's going to be a challenge. But you know what? If we do reach that $1,000, we have a challenge grant, $500 from existing members. Mm-hmm. So right now, we exceeded the goal in our first hour, Larry, cool. and that is wonderful. I mean, it just awesome. Great. But let's make the $1,000 goal that we have for these next few minutes and get that extra $500. 1-800-383-9772. You can help us reach that goal and get the extra $500 with your pledge of any amount to Wisconsin Public Radio, your pledge that helps pay for the programming and lets us know that you enjoyed listening to this program. I certainly did. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
You never know what you're going to learn on this program. Now, we talked a lot about milorganite. I know we had callers that mentioned that milorganite is actually processed and the metals are removed. I have to check on that to make sure that's correct. You never know where we're going to go on a garden talk show.
Sometimes we
zero in on one thing and kind of stay with it the whole hour.
Let's focus on the click and clack of vegetables.
I was going to say, what the ultimate compliment that you had your caller who thought our Vicars of Vegetables were like click and clack. I love the response that, yes, maybe we are, but they answer the question.
They do. Those guys know their stuff. Yeah, they know their stuff. Yeah.
And, you know, I wouldn't eat a vegetable grown by my brother.
I tell you what, we need a little fertilizer to make our money pot grow here at Wisconsin Public Radio.
That was a stretch, Larry.
In the form of dollars. You can help us out now and make a vote for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. We've got this is the only Garden Talk show during this drive. It's your one chance to put in a little vote for Garden Talk. All the different guests we have on the show, we have a lot of. UW Extension horticulturist from the counties. We have many, many. Melanie Myers, Mel Myers comes by, Melinda Myers, and visits with us. Oh, my gosh. Dick Zondag at Junk Seed comes by every so often with a lot of great information.
Really great gardening experts all over the state of Wisconsin, and then the Vicars of Vegetables as well.
I like the fact that we're in a different category. There are the people who know about gardening, and then there are the Vicars.
We have our normal regular guests, and then the click and clack of vegetables.
Yeah. You guys know your stuff, too, even though you pretend to hide it. 1-800-383-9772. 1-800-383-9772. 9772. Pledge your support to Wisconsin Public Radio. Help us reach this $1,000 goal that we're supposed to reach, according to our pledge gurus, by 12:30 this afternoon.
And we only have $1,000 to go to reach that goal.
a $1,000 pledge will do it. And I know you've had those before program.
Quite a few of them, actually. But you can pay in installments if you want to go with $120 pledge. You could do it at $10 a month, or if you want to go to that 9XM Leadership Circle, it's about $42 a month. I'd say a $500 contribution puts you into that inner circle, the 9XM Leadership Circle. But I tell you what, whatever amount you can afford, that's what we're looking for right now. Maybe it's only $60 a month. It's $5 or $60 or $5 a month or $100. It's about $2 a week. Whatever the amount, we hope that you will call within the next 4 minutes. It doesn't take very long to make your contribution.
No, it doesn't. And a volunteer will ask for your name and your address and how much you want to contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio. Again, that's completely up to you and how you want to pay for it. You can put it on a credit card right away, or we can send you a bill in the mail, or you can arrange to have that electronic funds transfer where it's taken out of your checking account on a monthly basis. Lots of different ways to pay for your pledge. The important thing to do is to make the pledge. pledge and become a supporter of a service that you value, a service that you believe is important to the entire state of Wisconsin. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org. Just moments to go, minutes to go before we have to stop asking, and we need to raise that $1,000.
Yeah, and we first need to get $85 because that takes us to $3,500. We're now at the point where if we had $85 more, we'd be up to $3,500.
And that would do the goal.
And that
okay.
would do the goal. And we're having trouble. You're thinking about whether or not you should support Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, if you pledged $100, that would put us over the top, and we would have our $500 contribution. So you can make that goal for us. Help us meet that goal.
You know, Larry, a lot of times I know that listeners are listening to these pledge drives and thinking, well, I'll call in sometime, or, you know, I wonder if they'll make the goal, or I wonder if it'll really help if I call in. Well, you know, right now, if you call in with a pledge of $85, you will help Wisconsin Public Radio get this extra $500 challenge from existing members, encouraging you and others to become members of Wisconsin Public Radio. And that $500, that extra challenge, will go a long way in paying the bills at Wisconsin Public Radio and paying for this program to come to you every week. 1-800-383-9772. And we're biting our fingernails, aren't we, Larry?
We are. We are indeed, because with a couple of minutes left, I certainly don't want to leave that $500 on the table. You are the most important source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio. We rely on your contributions, so we ask you to pledge. You can choose the amount you want to pledge. It'd make any difference how much you pledge. I'd love to see at least a $120 contribution to take us over the top here. But whatever the, and I would also love to see about 8 more $120 contributions. If you haven't renewed, now is the time to renew. If you've never contributed in the past, why not contribute now in these last 2 minutes of this drive for Garden Talk? So it's your one chance, really, to support Garden Talk and the great shows that I think we put together from 11 to 12:30.
And Larry, you can't say this, so I will. You and Jim do a wonderful job. Jim finds really great guests for you each and every weekday, wonderful guests for Garden Talk. I can't tell you how... This was really a find to find the Vicars mm-hmm. of Vegetables to bring you as part of the regular guests on Garden Talk. You do a wonderful job with your guests and with callers, and listeners love this program, and they love you, Larry, and that's why you want to call in a pledge at 1-800-383-9772, because you want us to reach this goal. You want to reach this goal for this extra
$500. 1-800-383-9772. We're going to have to go away, but there's a minute or so to go for you to call in with your contributions.
I don't think anyone else would have us, Jim. I think this is really the only place we can.
I'm really enamored by the vegetable.
Well, I tell you what, I'm enamored with you too. We have to go away, but thanks for listening and stay with us here on the Ideas Net. Call in with your contribution.